So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Rivulume.
But looking at you standing in that ring right now, I'd say you're the expert when it comes to getting the job done. Let's take a look at our not-so-little Stephanie from just last week. Year. Well, in two specific places at least. Talk about foreign objects. You want to say let the bodies hit the floor? I would say let the boobies hit the floor.
Wow. You see, Jericho, looking fine, Stephanie.
Yeah, she's as pure as a crystal.
You've been taking your vitamins, girl.
And Triple H is the only driver.
You see, Jericho, this you seem to be the expert on women with your long, pretty blonde hair. I hear there's an opening for a new Backstreet Boy. Maybe you ought to check it out.
Oh boy, was that ever a good one!
Quit playing games with my heart. With my heart. My heart. I should have known from the start. From my heart. My heart. My heart. I live my life.
Hello and welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Coming at you on this beautiful, beautiful Wednesday. How are you, Ting?
I'm great, Pollock.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
Why?
The G1 tournament's starting tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Of the nine shows, how many are you going to watch?
I don't know.
On a scale of 1 to 50 of the matches that are going to take place, how many do you think you'll watch?
There are going to be 50 matches?
Well, it's like it's 11 shows times like 7, 8 matches a show. Oh, way more than 50.
How many do you think I'm going to watch? Let's ask you.
9 shows. So 9 times like 8. We're looking at like 72 matches maybe.
How many matches do you think I will watch?
2. Oh. And that's being generous because I'm going to try and convince you to watch at least something.
I'll definitely tune in. If I hear something great, that occurred.
Did the preview show I did with WH and Chris Charlton not excite you?
I haven't heard it yet.
Oh, why not? Put it up 2 days ago.
Right. I just haven't listened to it yet. But once I hear it, I'll probably watch every single match.
You're going to be heading off to San Francisco in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I'm very much going to miss you.
Thanks.
In your place, I was thinking of contacting your friend Farah to put us in touch with your doppelganger to come in. Can you share this story, Wei?
Yeah, okay. Well,
it's a great one.
Yeah, my friend.
You should Instagram this shit. This would really promote your Instagram.
I did Instagram.
Oh, perfect.
It's already up there. Anyway, so last week on my Facebook, all of a sudden I get a message that says, "Hey, Wei, I found your doppelganger." My friend Farah told me afterwards. She was in a store. A hat store. I think it was Lids.
Classic.
Yeah, she was there with her friend. And her friend's like, "Hey, doesn't that person look like your friend Wei?" And she's like, "Oh, holy shit." And there's, sure enough, there's a guy that looked just like me. I'm not being...
Like racist. Scary similar.
Yeah, like we're not being racist or anything here. Like this guy looked like me. So much so that there's a photo of it. You can check my Instagram or my Facebook. So much so that I would show this picture to people that I knew. Basically, it was just a photo of her with this guy, and he's wearing a hat, And he's got, like, almost a similar beard as me, except he had the line.
Yeah, it was like the chin strap.
The douchebag line. So I'm going to shave that into my... I'm going to get that. But, like, anyway... Like,
wait a minute. You said you showed it to people you know. You showed it to someone you really know.
Yeah, I showed it to my mom.
And what did she say?
I said, Mom, hey, what do you think of this picture? What do you think of my new hat? And she looked at it, studied it. It's nice. Nice hat. Yeah, even my mom didn't know. Like, this guy had my face. This guy, like, had the same smile as me. Kind of looked like my dad, in a way. So, I don't know. Maybe there's some something my dad didn't tell me years ago. It turns out this guy's Korean.
Yes.
So, I don't know, man. Maybe my dad took a trip to Korea when he was young. Didn't tell us about it.
Man, imagine that. Another ting out there.
That'd be crazy. I got to meet this guy.
It's a great, great story. How's life going? Are you excited for your trip to San Francisco?
I am pretty excited, yeah. It's just a chance to see a city that I haven't really seen before that I've always wanted to see. It's a, you know, of all the American cities, I think San Francisco kind of stands out as like one of the more, I guess, visually distinct ones, I'd say, with all the hills and all that. So
do you fly straight there?
Yeah. And I was always a fan of Full House.
Well, that in and of itself is whatever. When you see the Golden Gate Bridge.
You think the Full House theme song?
Uh-huh. Did you see,
when are Jesse and the Rippers performing? On Jimmy Fallon.
Was that,
you told me this.
Have I told you this already?
Yeah.
I was about to ask you that, but I didn't even get the words out and you already knew what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'm psychic.
Maybe I was going to ask something else. Like, have you seen Dave Coulier and the Woodchuck guy?
Yeah, Woody.
Was that his name? Woody?
I don't know.
No, it was Mr. Woodchuck. Chuck. Yeah. Don't mind if I would. Remember he always do that?
No, not really.
Did you ever hear what happened to Stephanie Tanner, Jody Sweetan?
Oh, she got addicted to crystal meth.
Yeah. Oh. That's crazy.
Methany.
Oh, wow. Methany Tanner.
Yeah.
Way worse than driving the car through the kitchen that she did once.
Oh, yeah.
Remember she got in Jesse's car, I think, and put it in reverse and went right into the kitchen?
It was Danny's, actually.
Oh, was it Danny's car?
No.
Yeah. Fact check that shit.
Walter.
When I watched that episode, that became one of my biggest fears. I was like, I don't know what I would do in that situation. Like, I really think my parents would, like, kick me out of the house if I, like, drove a car into the kitchen or something.
Well, I mean, it's got to be a pretty brittle house to collapse like that. I mean, we live in brick house. I live in a brick house. I don't know about you, but I would think that backing up, I don't know, not even a meter would cause that type of damage.
Yeah, there was that. And I remember an episode of Full House where they were bringing a TV upstairs and they rested it on, like, the banister. And then Kimmy Gibbler pulled some sheet out from underneath that the TV was resting on, so the TV plummeted down to the first floor and just smashed.
Well, I don't remember that either.
Oh.
Well, you got a good memory. That house is massive.
Oh, I think every kid, I must have seen every episode of Full House.
Yeah, I think I did too. I saw an updated photo of Lori Loughlin.
She looks fantastic.
She looks okay.
I think she looks fantastic
for her
age.
She's like probably like 50 or something, but yeah.
Yeah. She was on the Jimmy Fallon show at the end.
Oh, she was.
After he finished, she came out.
Oh, this already happened.
Oh, yeah, this is over.
Oh, when did it happen?
Like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they performed. Jesse was dressed up as he would have been in, like, 1989.
Yeah.
Even with, like, the fake mullet.
Nice.
And then during the show, they cut to the audience where Danny Tanner is sitting in the crowd watching it and grooving to the music. And then at the end, Lori Loughlin walks out on the stage and plays Rebecca Katsopoulos and kisses her. Kisses him.
Kisses him? And yeah. What about the twins? Are they there?
No one else was there. It was just those three.
I wonder what those twins look like these days.
Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen?
No, the boy.
Oh, right. Nikki and Alex.
Oh, wow. That's a really good memory.
Yeah. I have no idea. Do you want to see what they look like? I'm sure that there's photos
They're
of them.
They're probably like 40 now.
They're not that old. Come on. Like, that show went off the air, what?
Yeah.
Nikki?
1990? What about Steve? Remember Steve?
Steve. He was the voice of Aladdin.
Really?
Yeah. Seriously? Nikki and Alex, Full
Did
House.
Did he sing as well?
Oh, he might have. These are all before pictures.
What are their real names?
Oh, here they are. Oh, they look like people I would hate.
Yeah, they just look like some typical...
skateboard kids?
Yeah.
Let's see, what was, I don't know what Steve's last name was.
Who cares?
This is them. Wearing a Thrasher shirt. Looks like a little CM Punk and, like, Aaron Carter.
Yeah, they look like assholes.
Yeah, I won't say assholes. They just
let they canceled this show. I would have hated to see them grow up.
Yeah, let's see. Jody Sweeten post meth. She doesn't have the meth.
Yeah, she doesn't really have the meth look.
That's not real.
That's not even her.
Yeah, I don't think so. If this is like, look at this woman. Like that's an incredibly looking woman for like 50. Well, I'm looking at Lori Loughlin, by the way.
That's not even recent.
Oh, dude, the one I think I clicked on was what Kimmy Gibbler looks like. Andrea Barber, I think her name was.
Yeah.
Stephanie looks fine post meth. If these are.
Oh, she looks great post meth.
This is her right now. She's got a kid.
She actually looks better with after meth.
It might have been an improvement. Let's do one more. Let's see what Kimmy Gibbler looks like, and then we'll get into the wrestling shit. I love how I still remember her name. These look like old photos. That's not her.
That's not her. This is her. This one. Right there. Yeah, she looks all right.
She looks like someone you went to high school with.
Yeah, same face.
But I went to an all-guys school, so that sounds like an insult. Andrea Barber, who once famously on Full House... chose to come to DJ's surprise party rather than go to WrestleMania that year when she said she had tickets. And yeah. I thought, what an idiot.
What WrestleMania would that have been?
Probably 7, where it was in L.A. Who would travel to Indianapolis in 92?
Yeah.
Not a great card either. All right. Raw from 2001. Chicago. Second week in a row in Chicago, way.
Mm-hmm.
They had... hot crowds for both of them. Though I thought a hotter crowd for this Raw in 2001.
I felt like it.
My usual question, were you watching during this invasion period?
Yes, I was.
This got your interest.
I was watching intently. I was watching, like, I used to record these shows, and then I would...
watch them again?
No, I would record them once, and then I would hook up another VCR to dub highlights from those tapes into a compilation of highlights.
The best of Raw.
From 2001.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've got like something like 15 of these tapes sitting there. And that was probably the height of my, I don't know.
Editing involving pro wrestling that you thought you would ever do at that age.
Yeah, I guess so.
Little did you know.
Little did I know.
What you've gone to become a major figure in the pro wrestling editing sphere.
I'm not a major figure, but yeah.
People know you. I would say of non-wrestlers, of people like outside of like a promotion or anything like that, you're one of the most famous Asians in professional wrestling. I'm serious.
Hmm.
Okay. Think about it. Like journalists or just media members... anything like
in
that?
Pro wrestling.
I can't think of any Asians off the top of my head.
Oh, you're obviously excluding all of Japan.
Yeah. I'm saying like, yeah, well, even, I mean, over there, obviously. But, I mean, outside of Jimmy Suzuki, how many are you familiar with that you can name off the top of your head?
Ken Watanabe?
Ken Watanabe would be one. Not really a journalist.
I'm not a journalist either.
You're a commentator. You're an analyst.
Who's another W.H. Park?
Yes, W.H. Park would qualify.
Big name.
Yep.
Who else is Asian? That's like a non-wrestler.
Yeah. Think of it this way, like you know, getting outside of Japan, obviously, but like
what's the Asian guy that WWE hired?
Charlie Min. I wonder what he's up to now.
I gotta beat him. He's way more famous than me.
I'm amazed that you remember Charlie Min.
Yeah, Charlie Min.
Very,
Sonny Ono?
Sonny Ono, yeah. Who made a killing in a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Charlie Min, WWF.
Yeah. Well, I'm right up there, so that's some good company.
Could have been you.
Yeah. That was my dream, Charlie Min. Yeah, man. That's what I have to aspire to.
Look at that. He now works Action News 19.
Is his name still Charlie Mint?
That's a good
question. Charlie Min sounds like such a made-up name.
Yeah.
Charlie Chan.
No, it is. Charlie Min, CBS in Cleveland. It
sounds like a chart.
His demo's up here.
A name a white guy would come up for an Asian.
I wonder if he's put any wrestling into his...
That looks old. Doesn't even... Oh, wow, it's him.
That's definitely
look
him.
At the, his
look, part, look at the hair. The
parted hair.
I know. The like eyes.
Every guy in high school had that hair. I went to an Asian high school. And like,
okay, we're going to get Charlie Min on the show, I promise.
Sure.
What is based this? Based in Cleveland? Demo? Yeah, it's his demo, I think. It's really long. It's like 6:34. Okay. Rule of thumb.
Yeah, you guys, this is terrible radio, but if you want to follow along, just...
This isn't radio, it's a podcast.
Just Google Charlie Min Reel on YouTube.
Yep. Anyway, back to Raw. This was the summer of 2001, the infamous summer of the invasion, where this was about a month or so after that horrendous Raw in Tacoma, Washington, that we have since reviewed. And I feel that that podcast we did, Way, reviewing that particular Buff Bagwell Booker T match, I think that its value upgraded over the past month because the WWE did a story on like the worst match ever and focused on Booker T versus Buff Bagwell. And they had Bagwell comment about it. They had all these figures in WCW at the time and WWE comment on the match. And then at the end, they were like,
how did they get that interview? Hey, Buff, Mr. Bagwell, we wanted to interview you.
Well, that's what I'm about to explain. Was at the end of the story, they said, we contacted Buff Bagwell, but he declined to comment on the match.
Okay.
But we did get him to comment on the match on that podcast.
Oh, that's right.
So what a plug for our archives right there. For free, you can go hear Buff Bagwell discuss that infamous night in Tacoma, Washington.
So how did you manage to get him to talk?
Because I'm way more persuasive than the WWE.com staff
What did you do?
I contacted him and I said, hey, do you want to come on review Away? And he said, wait a minute, with Wei Ting? And I said, oh, yes. Wow, he's like the Charlie Min of Canada. Yeah. And he came on.
Okay.
Very happy to come on. Nice. It was a good interview, as I recall.
I remember.
Do you know we're coming up on 4 years of doing this particular podcast?
No, we got to think of a porno to do for our fourth anniversary. I'm just joking.
She-Hulk coming out soon?
No, we're not doing any
porno. No, I don't think we're... I think we've retired.
Yeah.
That is the one that... some of my friends found
She-Hulk?
No. The podcast we did last year,
Queen of the Ring.
And it's like, I didn't even know they were aware I did a wrestling podcast.
Male or female friends?
Male friends.
Okay.
And they found the podcast and listened to it, and they thought it was so funny.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
They were like, Wade gagging was the greatest.
Oh, man. That was terrible.
Yeah, but... Yeah, what an uncomfortable show.
It was pretty awful, man. Yeah, it was really uncomfortable. Just watching porn with like another dude, that was weird.
What was worse was it was on my fucking credit card for 3 months.
Yeah,
I paid $60 or something for that fucking show.
Well, sorry.
They really...
You didn't expense that? Didn't expense
I didn't expense
the
that one.
To
no.
The fight network?
No. I should have.
Yeah, you should have.
Queen of the Ring, XXX porno podcast review.
I don't think it shows up on your credit card. You say, like, oh, this was the New Japan show.
Yes, it was...
for 3 months.
Yeah. Kizuna Road, inside China, or something.
Kizuna Road.
Well, that was the last New Japan pay-per-view.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, Chicago, Illinois, for this Raw. Talk about overdoing it here. You really notice watching these old Raws, Way, of how they just went insane with their pyro. They loved their pyro in 2001.
They like, still do.
I think, like, the GDP of some small countries wouldn't be big enough to cover the pyro budget that the WWF maintained in 2001.
Yeah. There are probably some, like...
Like, I was concerned at, like, all these explosions. Like, I would have been frightened if this happened to me and I was there live ringside and wasn't aware of all this.
Yeah, right. Oh, I mean, explosions equal ratings.
That's an easy one, I think, to cut on the budget. When you see Raw just open now cold and it goes right to some guy's theme music, they're saving so much money.
I guess.
The announcers here, I forgot, this was the time period we had Jim Ross and Paul Heyman while Jerry Lawler was gone. Mm-hmm. This was right around the time when, you know, he had left because his girlfriend at the time, Stacy Carter, had been fired and he decided to leave with her, trying to save face here with his lady. And then she ended up leaving him for another man. Mm. Shitty summer for Jerry Lawler.
Yep. At least he got his job back.
He did get his job back, and he moved on in the female department. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, Stacy Carter was going to get old anyway. For his tastes.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But, yeah, he probably felt like he had to leave. You know, if your wife got fired. I mean, I don't know. I always felt kind of weird about that. I don't know. Would you leave if you worked with your wife and then she got fired?
I wouldn't want to work with my wife.
Yeah. You wouldn't, but let's say you were. Circumstances just brought you together. Your fiance says, I really am taking a liking to this fighting stuff. I want to get a job here. She was brought on as, I don't know.
An editor.
Editor. And she got let go. Would you feel the need to quit?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, how would you explain it? How would you explain it to her? What if she was really upset? How could you still work for these guys, John?
Well, what a silly conclusion to make, though, that, okay, you've just lost your income. How about I get rid of mine as well? Doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't, no.
Yeah.
But what if she was really angry at this company?
Well, I'd be, you know, be angry, but I still work there. What about you?
No, I think I'd be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they, like,
it doesn't make any sense.
Because you were bad at your job doesn't mean I should suffer as well.
Yeah, Jerry Lawler had plenty of opportunities.
Yeah, well, and
then he ended up back there. So,
yeah, why did Lawler leave? Come on.
So
you always pick your work over your family.
Noble words from Waitin.
Yeah.
So Jim Ross and Paul Heyman, they announced that tonight's main event, it's going to be a steel cage match with The Undertaker and Kane against Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo for the WCW tag titles.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which set of tag titles they were fighting for, but I think it was the WCW ones, right?
I think so. I think Undertaker and Kane were the WCW tag team champions, and the WWF champions were
DDP and Canyon?
Yeah. Just
Let's recap for everyone, because this was asked in the feedback of how many titles they had at the time. They had the WWF and World and WCW title.
Yeah.
The Intercontinental and U.S. title, the two tag titles, the Cruiserweight title, the Light Heavyweight title, the Women's title, Hardcore title,
uh-huh.
European title.
Yeah.
Am I missing any? That's 11 titles.
They might have dissolved the European by this time. But
I don't think they had.
Okay. Well,
it was 2002. They got rid of a bunch of titles. But at this point, they were on fucking overdrive.
Yeah.
When it came to titles. I don't think titles ever meant as little as maybe during this time period where it was like they literally like had pay-per-views where every match was a title match.
Yeah, it sucked.
The Alliance comes out to start the show to Drowning Pool, which was great because Ross asks, "What's this?" And Heyman says, "It's called music." I found that an entertaining back and forth.
It was, yeah. I just don't understand why... Was this the theme song for that Invasion pay-per-view or something?
It was the theme song that they used for SummerSlam, but also became the theme for the Alliance.
Yeah. I mean...
Didn't like this song?
I think the song's fine, but, you know, it goes back to my issue with the whole Invasion. It's just these versions of WCW and ECW had virtually no relationship to what they were initially. Like... It was just them basically taking the names WCW and ECW and making their own brand new faction out of it. You know, like, I mean, what does this song have to do with ECW or WCW? You know what I mean?
Well, they're going to make the bodies hit the floor in WWF.
So that could be any group.
Well, I guess you could say there's no music synonymous with WCW. And with
the
ECW...
Theme song.
Oh, they should have used the... Yeah. Dun!
Yeah.
That would have been great. Had the Nitro Girls bring them out.
Yeah.
ECW.
They should have had a Nitro Girl. Yeah, exactly.
ECW at the time, they were still, like, it had been declared bankrupt. So they were still dividing the assets in bankruptcy court. WWE actually didn't have the rights at the time. And thus they called it the Alliance rather than, they couldn't use the letters ECW at the time.
They could still use the logo.
I don't know if that was, did they have it on this show?
Yeah. All over.
They
They're wearing ECW shirts. Heyman would say ECW.
There was some specific, because they eventually obviously got all the rights to ECW, but I think at this time there were still some assets that they just weren't allowed to use. Right. And I don't know what the deal with was the logo, because you would think that would fall under that.
I think they leased it or something.
Anyway, they came out, and what a group this was, Way. They all come out, they surround the ring, and then Steve Austin gets his own entrance coming out. He is the WWF champion at this time. Got a ton of heat in Chicago. I mean, this crowd hated this man.
Yeah.
He had just turned yet again at the Invasion pay-per-view after teasing a return to the WWF team. And they showed footage of him from SmackDown the prior week, damaging Kurt Angle's ankle and then mocking Kurt and doing the Pledge of Allegiance. He says that the Alliance makes him so proud. And he starts asking around, who wants to take on Kurt Angle tonight after I softened him up? And everyone's just looking confused. And then Heyman starts chanting RVD at ringside to try and get the crowd to start this chant. And he gets on the apron. Van Dam does. They're cheering for him. So Austin picks Van Dam to face Kurt Angle tonight for the hardcore title.
Yeah, by this point, RVD was clearly the standout babyface star of this whole alliance.
I would argue the only standout amongst the alliance at this point.
Booker, too, was getting some traction, but by far it was RVD that was getting a lot of the attention on all of this TV.
They bring DDP and Canyon up onto the apron, who had just won the WWE tag titles, and Austin congratulates them, as well as noting Test, who is the newest member of the alliance after turning heel the prior week.
Nothing says WCW or ECW like
Test. Yeah, we got Test.
What a mess.
I hated the ones where it was just, I understand why you put Austin in this group to give them a big name, but that's, it's always something that you'll debate at the time. You needed big names to really get this across, and they weren't willing to spend the money and upset the locker room by bringing in all these ex-WCW guys. But at the same time, I mean, this was money that was going to go towards you making more money. So instead, we had Steve Austin and Test on the WCW team. Then Rhino is on the apron, who Austin calls, "You mean little bastard," in reference to Rhino goring Chris Jericho, quote, into the depths of hell, as the crowd then chanted for Y2J. Steve Austin notes that there will be a Steve Austin Invitational on SmackDown this week where he's going to teach the basics and fundamentals of wrestling. This is what gut check should be. Teaching them the ropes.
Yeah.
And calls out Taz, Raven, and Hugh Morris as he brings them into the ring, and during the same time, he notes how Tommy Dreamer's wearing an Austin t-shirt, yet he's never even had a match here in the WWF, and tells him to stop sucking up in the back, and he needs a backbone, saying that Dreamer just goes around getting people coffee and food.
Is that right?
Man.
What was the point of that?
I don't know what the point of a lot of this opening segment was, Way. He then asks Hugh Morris, and I will say, Steve Austin was incredibly entertaining here in this segment. I mean, just playing off of these guys. Mm-hmm. He goes one by one, starting off with Hugh Morris. He's doing the what chant, which had not really caught on at this point. This was the seeds of this death chant that everyone hates.
It was still a thing that he would just do on his own as a heel deal to, you know, part of this crazy character. But yeah, the crowd hadn't picked up on it yet.
He says, "Am I making you laugh? Am I humorous?" Making fun of his name. Then he asks Raven, "Who whipped your ass last week?" And it was Perry Saturn, who Austin cannot understand how you lost to this man who has a sexual relationship with a mop. And then he mocks him with the, "What about me? What about Raven?" And he tells him, "You suck. Quote Stone Cold, nevermore. And you make me sick." And then he finishes with Taz saying, "At least these two men went down fighting. Whereas you just stood there," as they show footage of The Rock putting Shane McMahon through a table with The Rock Bottom on SmackDown, where Taz was on commentary and just stood by and watched it. And he goes over Taz's catchphrase of "just another victim," asks him about being from Red Hook, New Jersey, New York, wherever. And then he takes off his belt and instructs Taz he's going to have a come-to-Jesus meeting, and he's going to whip Taz to make an example of him, and tells him, "Take your shirt off. Take your shirt off." And whips him right in the face with this leather belt. And it led to Taz grabbing his arm to stop him from whipping him. And Austin gets Morris and Raven to attack Taz as the other members join in. The Dudleys did the what's up spot. Rhino gored Taz. And looking at the way Taz took this gore right onto his neck explains the problems he would have years later and why he cannot wrestle anymore. And they lay out Taz as Austin just whips him repeatedly over and over. I would say one or two shots past the point of feeling awkward watching a white redneck whipping Taz on national television.
He's white.
Is Taz white?
Yeah. Sicilian.
He's Sicilian.
Yeah.
Well, it was still an uncomfortable whipping here.
Right.
And I just didn't understand this segment too much. It's like, we are just starting this invasion and we're already doing the self-implosion. And my takeaway with I should take like four guys seriously in this alliance and the rest are just geeks.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't really understand. I guess it was just really to build up Austin and how tough of a cult leader he is. And with that, I think he did a great job. He's a very believable heel cult leader, and he's undoubtedly very charismatic. I got the sense much of all, if not all, pretty much all of this felt improvised.
No, definitely.
I mean, obviously, apart from, you know, like all the stuff with Taz at the end, but a lot of like what Austin felt like, it felt improvised, and I thought he did a great job at it. But at the same time, I got the sense that he didn't really know these characters all that well. Aside from, you know, knowing a few catchphrases from being around them for a bit, I didn't get the sense that, you know, Steve Austin knew much about Hugh Morris at all, apart from what his name was, or even Raven, you know, apart from whatever his catchphrases were. But I liked the thing with Taz. I thought Taz, for whatever reason, still to this day, I think, I mean, if you put him in the right light, he still has that credibility as, you know, being this superstar and this face in ECW, so that anytime he's involved in a fan-friendly situation like this one, fans will always get behind him, and I thought they used that well. But, you know, it almost kind of babyfaced Taz, but I don't think...
Oh, totally babyfaced
him. I don't think they ever followed up with it.
I don't recall anything. But, I mean, this segment, you just wanted Taz to pop this guy in the face.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't recall anything. At most, it was like a TV match where Austin would have squashed him.
Turn back?
I mean, they all eventually turned, but Taz stayed. I'm trying to recall.
It was very negligible.
A very blurry period. This went 20 minutes, this segment. This was a lengthy one.
Well, that's what you get when you improvise.
Yeah, think about that. 20 minutes here, we're into Raw of a two-hour show. I mean, that was 10% of the show right there. Christian and Edge are in the back. This is when they were still teaming, but Edge, of course, had just won the King of the Ring in June of that year, and they were starting the dissension between Christian and Edge, where Christian was starting to get jealous of Edge's success, and they were to have a tag match the prior week, but Christian didn't show up, explaining that he had gone at the last minute to get his King of the Ring trophy polished for him. And Christian notes that they're taking on Lance Storm and Justin Credible, and he says that Justin Credible is not even that creative of a name, and he renames him Justin Stupidhead.
Yeah.
Justin Stupidhead. It's not even like a pun.
Yeah.
Very weak.
Oh. Yeah, to him it was funny.
These two, it was just, you see just such a change of these two in particular that we've seen over the past, you know, the years following this. This was like right at the end of their comedic phase and into specifically Edge at the part. At that point, he was going to be getting the bigger push of the two.
Absolutely. And it needed to happen, of course. You can't just be a comedy guy.
First match of the night was Tajiri, who was with Team WWE.
Yeah.
To make sense of that one, with William Regal against...
Yo, you dealing with the X Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo.
Oh, I know you hate that factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like that.
Albert with X-Pac, two members of X Factor.
Yes. X Factor. Past their prime. Nearing the end of their course.
Yes.
Justin Credible had already left.
He had defected.
Yeah. But, I mean, still got to have that music.
Absolutely. Amazing here that you look at this whole show way, and the turnover is, you know, there's a lot of people that are not around anymore, but quite a number that are still around, like, now.
It's true.
Albert, Kane, Taker, I mean, even Booker T, I mean...
Regal,
like, this was 12 years ago.
Yeah, Christian, I mean, Booker, Jericho, Steph, of course. Yeah, that's true.
Even down to, like, Heyman, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, compare this to, like, WWF of, you know, go 12 years before this, of 1989 to 2001.
People are dead.
Yeah. So Tajiri, who had just debuted, I think it was, like, 2 or 3 months before this, he was so over at the beginning of his WWF run. I mean, just having some tremendous TV matches, had really great chemistry with Regal.
Great thing was just that his style was so unique and so different with those kicks and, you know, his offense that I think he's just one of those guys that you watch him wrestle once. And I just remember even that first match when, I mean, they debuted him for a long time as Regal's kind of bellboy or whatever, his assistant. And then finally they put him in a match, and I just remember that first kick, the whole place just kind of like lit up. Like these.
He had a style that was so unlike what you were used to at the time,
yeah.
And he got so over that I would say that it was the right call not to turn him when he came in with that momentum,
yeah.
And turn him as just a faceless background member of the Alliance, which is what he would have been, and I believe is what they ended up doing with him at some point. I think he did join the Alliance.
I don't know, but did they?
I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe not. Anyway, Tajiri is the light heavyweight champion at this point. Albert has the advantage, hits a military press slam, and Tajiri leapfrogs over for a splash and into the tarantula. X-Pac then attacks Tajiri, and Regal fights off X-Pac. X-Pac then misses a spinning heel kick, and Tajiri hits him with the green mist on the floor. And Albert goes for a tree slam as the referee is distracted, and Regal clips the leg of Albert. Tajiri gets a two count and then hits the red mist with a drop kick off the turnbuckle and pins Albert at 227. Big, big pop for the win.
Yeah, and at SummerSlam is when they'll actually do a total unification of the light heavyweight and the cruiserweight titles.
With Tajiri and X-Pac, and we'll review that next week.
Yep.
But one consistent theme on this episode of Raw is that outside of the main event, like these TV matches, you had to rush through your stuff. Like you were given very, very little time to try and get a lot in. And there were a number of guys on this show who had kind of perfected the art of those 3-minute TV matches, which are not easy to get across, you know, in this kind of fashion.
Mm-hmm.
15-year-old Michael Cole is then in the back. Wearing his WWF New York t-shirt.
He was way skinnier.
Oh, yeah. He's
really bulked up.
In 12 years, he's put on more than 12 pounds.
Yep.
Yeah. He's a big guy. Kurt Angle walks in, and Cole asks him about the condition of his ankle. Angle says he isn't going to cry about his ankle. It's sore, but mentions that winning the gold medal, he did so with way worse injuries, and he's not going to back down from RVD's challenge tonight for the hardcore title. But just as he says that, Hugh Morris attacks him from behind, but Angle just fights him off and applies the ankle lock, leaving Hugh Morris wincing in pain. Maybe reminiscent of some training sessions.
Ooh. Ouch. Angle at this point was still kind of playing his whiny comedic character, and it was kind of odd because, like, at this point he was kind of pretty much the top babyface in the company outside of The Rock. But, you know, as a full-time guy, he was really the top guy. And I think...
they had a really hard time letting go of the...
I was getting the sense that, you know, it was kind of hard to take this guy too seriously when he's still kind of drinking milk and, you know, doing all that.
The milk had to go.
Yeah.
That was... We needed to get rid of it, but they found this guy so entertaining that I think they had a hard time letting go of it.
It's like Edge and Christian. It's hard to just make that transition right, you know, like overnight. You know, you had to kind of ease your way in.
Picture today's TNA Kurt Angle, like, having some milk and smiling in the back. Like, it's such a departure at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went to Lance Storm and Justin Credible, the Impact players.
Which they were not identified as.
No, but they did do their pose at the top of the ramp.
Yeah.
Which was like they raced through it almost like, I hope they don't see what we're doing here.
It's like they wanted to go out of their way to not acknowledge all this back history that these guys had, you know? I never understood that.
I don't know either. And this was the first time they had paired these two together since...
That should be a big deal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's not. Because, like, how many people watching this show even knew of the Impact players? But, I mean, at the same time,
if that answer is not a lot, that speaks volumes, though, about why are you going in this direction, then? It's either...
You mean the alums?
You're introducing ECW here. You would hope some people are familiar with this stuff. And I think they were. I think a lot were.
I agree. And you know what? Like, look at what it did for RVD all throughout the show. You had Heyman kind of promoting RVD's credentials. I mean, look at what it did for Rhino when he came into the WWE. Just have Heyman like put over this guy as being a big deal in ECW, and it made him a big deal in the WWE. Same here with the Impact players, but I mean, by this time they're just jobbers, basically.
They took on Edge and Christian. Christian went for an atomic drop as Credible made a blind tag and came in. Credible hit a powerbomb out of the corner to Christian, and then Edge and Stormer tagged in. Edge Irish whips Credible, and it knocks Christian off of the apron, but Edge comes back with a double clothesline to both of the heels, but then goes to tag, and Christian's on the floor selling and ends up walking into a super kick by Storm for a two count, and Storm holds Edge, but Credible ends up super kicking Storm as Edge gets out of the way, hits the implant DDT to Credible, and pins Credible at 231. And then after the match, Storm took out the knee of Edge and then applied the half crab with Edge tapping out. And then Christian chased him off with a chair. And this would set up SummerSlam that Sunday with Edge taking on Intercontinental Champion Lance Storm.
Hmm.
So, decent. Yeah. Nothing noteworthy?
Fine. No, not at all. Lance was the IC champ?
Yep.
Wow.
Everyone got some titles at some point in this run.
Who did he beat? Did he beat Edge?
I think he beat Albert.
Albert.
Albert was the IC champion before this.
Okay, sure.
Austin is with Deborah and RVD in the back going over the Kurt Angle match, and Austin says he topped everyone in ECW, but he can show the world what he can do tonight, and asks if the Olympics ever saw an athlete quite like Rob Van Dam. The answer would be yes.
What do you mean?
Have the Olympics ever had an athlete like Rob Van Dam?
Oh, yeah.
I think they have.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Sean's...
Well, I mean, not guys that could wrestle.
Yeah.
But in terms of athletics, yeah, for sure.
Sean Stasiak walks in, and he's all pumped up from Austin's speeches. And Austin, he did this with a bunch of guys. He didn't even know their names. So
that's what I meant.
Like, just further destroying these underlings.
I just don't feel like... I mean, Steve Austin, for sure, the man himself, never watched WCW, obviously. And I felt like the writers themselves didn't even bother to do the research for what a lot of these guys were. And therefore, they all came across as nameless faces. Whereas if you actually, you know, did follow WCW, you'd know that all these guys had their own backstories. I mean, like, Shane Helms here was nobody. Meanwhile, like, in WCW, it was a pretty big deal.
He brings up Sean Stasiak's dad, Stan Stasiak, being a former WWF champion, and says he's going to do something tonight that no one will ever forget. The promise of Sean Stasiak.
That kind of became true.
Yeah, maybe he was recording this.
Ooh.
We go to WWF New York, but there was no one there because Perry Saturn missed because of transportation issues, couldn't get there. That's some research.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
There you go.
Transportation issues. Interesting.
He was, him and Moppy got detained, I guess, somewhere.
Seriously, what happened?
I don't know what the issue was. They just couldn't get there on time.
Oh, wow.
DDP, Canyon, Sean O'Hare, and Chuck Palumbo are in the back as Canyon brags about all of his gold because he's got a tag title and the United States title. How many segments in a row have we got involving people having titles?
I don't know.
The prior segment at RVD... who is the hardcore champion?
Austin.
Prior to that, we had Austin. Prior to that, we had Lance Storm with the IC champion. Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle had a backstage segment where he was not a champion, but...
He was about to be.
He was a gold medalist.
Tajiri had a title. X-Pac had a title. Whatever. There are a lot of titles.
It's a lot of titles, is our point. So, DDP and Canyon are pumping up O'Hare and Palumbo, and then they all... talk about making an impact, and then they just yell, like, yeah! And Sean O'Hare grunting here was something that was, my God, GIF-worthy. He's just grunting like a madman. My question here, DDP and Canyon were set to face The Undertaker and Kane for the tag titles at the pay-per-view. Why would they want O'Hare and Palumbo to win the titles tonight?
Was this a title match?
Yeah, they explained the cage match was for the titles tonight.
Right. Well, I mean, I think they just, no matter what, they wanted all the titles to be a part of the alliance. And if they...
Yeah, well, they could get the... Just wait 6 days. We're going to face them and get the titles for ourselves.
I mean, if Rory and St. Pierre were... Like, St. Pierre was supposed to... Let's say St. Pierre wasn't the champion. He was fighting for the title. You don't think Rory would be cheering him on?
I think deep down he would be hoping George doesn't win it so he can win the title.
Deep down, but on the surface he would probably have
so you think there might have been an underlying motivation for DDP and Canyon. Kurt Angle walks into William Regal's office. Angle says he isn't 100%, and Regal says no one would think less of Angle if he just took the night off to get ready for his big match with Austin this Sunday. And Angle says, well, I'm an American, and that means I don't back down from challenges. And as he's talking, he just simply backsteps as Sean Stasiak fucking wind sprints into this suit of armor. I remember this so well.
Yeah.
This was, to me, the most memorable moment of Sean Stasiak's career.
Yeah.
Was this short-lived gimmick where he ran into shit off camera. Mm-hmm. Just great. The timing was impeccable. The sound was great. Yeah. And he just knocked himself off cold. And it was as much Kurt Angle just no-selling this guy, just knocking himself out as he just stepped back over this guy to continue his conversation. And they replayed this thing like 3 times, including after the commercial break. Like, you just imagine that as they were in the control room watching this, everyone just died laughing watching this.
Everybody watching this anywhere would have died laughing. This was a, yeah, very memorable moment. And I think... Part of me feels like this gimmick that they would give Sean Stasiak was in some way some type of retribution for all that stuff with the taping.
He was a goofball.
Yeah.
Which there was probably a lot of jockeying for position to be the top goofball in the alliance. It seemed that everyone was getting that role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Stasiak, memorable here.
He did a great job running.
He did. I mean, he ran full force into that thing of armor. I don't think I could do that.
Yeah.
It'd be tough, I mean, to mentally... brace yourself for running into a suit of armor.
Mm-hmm.
And that suit of armor not only stayed up, it was not dented.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yep. This guy might have actually been out.
That's why
he knocked himself into Planet Stasiak.
Real armor.
Next up, if we can call this a match, The Undertaker and Kane against Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo, steel cage for the WCW tag titles. Taker and Kane got a mega reaction as they were joined by Sarah, who they would later call Sarah Undertaker.
No.
So what it must read on the birth certificate, the marriage certificate, at least. This would have been wife number 2?
I don't know.
I believe, for Undertaker.
I'm not sure.
O'Hare and Palumbo attack as soon as they enter the cage. Kane chokeslams O'Hare. DDP and Canyon come out to watch at the top of the ramp as Heyman calls DDP and Canyon the greatest WWF tag champions of all time. They won the titles the Thursday before this Raw. And Ross says, that's an arguable point. Arguable. They hit the last ride to Palumbo. Both are laid out as DDP and Canyon come to ringside. O'Hare started moving, so Kane just chokeslams him again. And the DDP and Canyon go after Sarah, who is in between them and just scales the cage to the top. They knock DDP and Canyon off the cage as they try to climb. Then they remembered that O'Hare and Palumbo are still dead in the ring, and they haven't pinned them yet. So they just nonchalantly get on top of these two for the double pin at 4 minutes and 18 seconds. And the visual at the end was Undertaker climbing and sitting on top of the cage structure with his wife, Sarah, as Chuck Palumbo and Sean O'Hare were so many hundreds of thousands of feet buried underneath during this exhibition is probably the best I could say. This is like if you were playing a video game and your buddy had to go to the washroom and you unpaused it and just beat the shit out of his character in the game with no retribution from him, and you just laugh about it at the end when he comes back from the washroom and sees that you've killed him. Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo were just destroyed in this match.
They just looked like complete jokes. And you remember at the tail end of WCW, these were two of the guys with possibly the brightest futures in the whole company.
I always thought, yeah, these two in particular, they were in separate teams at the time, because you had Palumbo with Stasiak and O'Hare with Jindrak. And I always thought when they came in and they put these two together, I was like, okay, you're taking the strongest links, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And man, this... We had a steel cage match to build up a steel cage match on Sunday. Yeah. No need for this. Fucking Chuck Palumbo did color in this. This was just the stupidest match. And as much as, you know, The Undertaker is so revered right now, at this point in time in that 2001 period, there was a lot of disdain for The Undertaker because he did this all the time to guys when many felt that it was his time to lose to a John Cena at the time or lose to some guy. And I mean, Taker was not exactly blowing people away with his work during the biker stage.
Yeah.
But would, of course, that would very much change over the next decade or so. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I was not a big Undertaker fan at this point in his run.
Me neither. Yeah, it's just kind of unfortunate. And because, you know, they really just saw these guys. They didn't know anything about them. They basically just saw them as enhancement guys. On the
there was a lot of that at that time, of these new guys coming in, and it was just, you know, they don't know how to work, they can't do this. It was just kind of a mess when it came to some of these guys just trying to fit in.
It just, WCW, if you're watching this show, it did not seem like a threat at all.
No. Stephanie McMahon comes out next with Rhino, and coming up at SummerSlam, it's Rhino and Chris Jericho. Stephanie is saying she feels great after Rhino gored Jericho through the SmackDown set last week, which was a very cool idea because they were getting rid of the SmackDown set. So your final visual of the SmackDown kind of circular screen was Jericho getting gored through it, and they replayed this over and over. It looked excellent.
Yeah, it did.
Really cool angle with the Rhino. This was certainly, I think we'd agree, the peak of Rhino's time in WWE.
Yeah, either this or even slightly before it. I would say this whole invasion thing screwed up a lot of people's careers.
Yeah, Rhino was one of the many who later on, right after the summer, had to go for neck surgery and would be out for a year and never was anywhere near this level ever again until his release in 2005. And Stephanie says that she is so proud of Rhino, she wants to accompany him to the ring this Sunday to watch him put the final nail in Jericho's coffin. And Rhino says it would be his honor to have Stephanie in his corner, but then Jericho comes out instead after Stephanie wants to watch the footage again. Jericho, in 2001, wearing a Jericho Hall t-shirt with pleather pants.
You could still rock those pants on stage, I bet.
Sure. And he says this Sunday he's going to take care of that nasty, greasy animal, and he's also going to get Rhino, too. And the Chicago crowd just rubbing their bellies in laughter. And says it looks like Stephanie is the one who got the job done, and pulls up these two still photos, one of Stephanie from a year ago with her chest out, and then one from a week ago, where there was a noticeable additions,
yes,
to her chest.
Yeah.
And pointing out that she has had a recent boob job, as Paul Heyman is trying to defend it, saying it's all in the posture. And this led to just a ton of boob jokes. They were referred to as foreign objects. He said, forget about let the bodies hit the floor. It's let the boobies hit the floor. Stephanie says, I don't know what you're talking about, Jericho. And Jericho says, well, maybe we can talk about it. I hear there's a Hooters in the neighborhood. Did you enjoy this?
I thought it was funny.
I did, too. Sometimes I find I'm critical of Jericho's older stuff and his promos not holding up. Yeah. This was entertaining
it
for
was
what
entertaining.
It was.
That absolutely was. Subject matter was great, and I thought he had some pretty good ones in there. I thought he went a little
overboard. Not in terms of, you know, offensiveness, not at all. It was just overboard with the silliness of the jokes. But, yeah, I thought this was cool. I mean, I remember, like, when she came back to start that invasion, everybody saw it. I mean, clearly there's something different about her.
What does Vince McMahon do when he gets the script for Raw and he's going over? I mean, let's assume he did. He wasn't the one that came up with this segment.
He probably thought,
yeah, her tits, they're bigger.
He probably thought this was hilarious.
God damn it!
Yeah,
get one in about calling her a whore. Remember, get that one in.
Yeah, remember when there's that scene like the where Steph and Triple H were about to have their second marriage, and there's that scene backstage where Vince is looking over Steph in her dress.
Oh yeah,
and he's just staring at her boobs like. Yeah, it was kind of uncomfortable.
It's like the sun or something. You shouldn't stare at that.
Yeah, yeah. Man, she went really large.
Creepy.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think this dress as well kind of enhanced things.
Yeah, but even without, like, you can kind of...
Oh, without her dress, I think they'd be very noticeable, too.
I mean, what I mean is, like, I don't know. Typically, you like, this was like porn star size of a boob job. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well... Young Stephanie was growing up, and I guess she claimed, and this could be bullshit, but she was on Opie and Anthony once, and they asked her, her boob job came up, and said, what was your reasoning for getting this? And she said she was at a show, and some fan in the crowd had a sign about Stephanie's saggy chest, and that one sign caused her to go get a boob job. That's kind of crazy that you would let a fan sign if that's a true story.
Yeah, but you know
what? That's crazy.
Especially for women, you know, self-image is a very difficult thing to handle. And you know what? If it makes her feel better, good for her. I think she looks great.
I always thought Stephanie was very attractive when she first came on because she looked like a normal woman. I was like, I could foresee meeting this woman in the street.
Yeah.
And that sounds like, I don't mean like that. I mean, she looked like a normal, approachable woman.
Uh-huh.
Whereas,
well, now she's a bad guy. Now she's got to be more than that.
She must not be approachable.
Yeah.
Anyway, as we get back to a segment based around a woman's, artificial enhanced boobs. Rhino tells Jericho to show her some respect and then gets interrupted as Booker T comes out and says he was in the back and it pained him to watch this punk-ass sucker disrespect you and says Stephanie is all natural and says, damn, Stephanie, you looking fine. Booker was so entertaining here.
He's awesome.
I really enjoyed this version of Booker.
I think this was something that they never really hit on in WCW, but like he really got to explore in WWE was just his sense of his comedic side. I think he's a very funny guy.
He is very funny, and I think that they almost went too far with him, where he became a goofy. Well, I mean, I think the Weakest Link appearance probably didn't help him too much in that regard.
But like that gold dust stuff was
great.
Was a classic.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, maybe you can argue that that was kind of – when Booker T, he was a top guy in WCW, and in WWE, I never did see him being in that top spot.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, what he did was, you know, it wasn't like he was a forgotten undercard guy.
King Booker?
Yeah, King Booker, you're right. That got a good run.
Yeah.
He had some good stuff in WWE mm-hmm. for his time there. Maybe the most successful WCW guy. I would say that they brought over.
Sure.
Certainly did better than DDP.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who else.
Chavo? Like, realistically, those are the ones that stuck around for any length of time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, more so than Goldberg, Nash, Hall.
Yeah, when you add it all up.
Yeah.
Anyway, he says, he starts running down Jericho's appearance with his long blonde hair and makes a Backstreet Boys reference.
Oh, man.
that's when you know this is 2001.
No, but you know, like... This joke was so, like, his joke was that...
With your long, blonde hair.
I hear there's an opening for the Backstreet Boys. Like, this joke was so lame, but when Booker says it, it's so good.
He says, Jericho comes back and says, I hear there's an opening for the A-Team because you look like Mr. T.
And his last name's T.
Yeah, very clever. He says... Booker says he's going to take The Rock to school on Sunday, and this leads to The Rock coming out Apparently Chicago had a hard time seeing this because it was The Rock coming out and not Jesus Christ, because that's what they treated this man like. Mm-hmm. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
What a reaction.
He's a movie star.
Wow. Big this point. This guy was like 29, 30 years old at this time. That's insane.
Yeah.
He comes out, just a massive reaction, and you really got this feeling that this was very another segment that was very loosely put together, where it was just kind of working off of each other, and or at least that's what this turned into. And he talks about, it was like, all he needed was like, Booker, what are you going to say? He's like, I'm going to say I'm going to take you to school. School. Got it. And that's what he would base his promo around here. He came out and he started mimicking a yellow bus coming to pick up Booker in the morning because he'd be the oldest 27-year-old high school senior, and making fun of Booker being asked what 2 + 2 is and saying, Thomas Jefferson, sucka. Way funnier when The Rock does it than me. Calls Shane a pussy, which did not get censored, Shane McMahon. And then Jericho comes back, and they got into a rhyming war. Yeah. Some rap battles here. Mm-hmm. Jericho says, we're dealing here with the gore and the whore, in reference to Stephanie. And then Rock, feeling the need to outdo him, says, well, what rhymes with sucka? He says that we have the punk-ass sucka and the silver spoon motherfucker. This did get censored. What?
I laughed because you actually said it. It's just funny to hear you say it.
Oh, to say motherfucker. I liked how Rock, like, perfectly knowing he's on live television, is like, yeah, I'm going to say this.
Oh, they probably warned.
I don't know if they did.
Oh, I would have to think so.
Maybe. So, anyway, this leads to a tag match being made for that night, where the crowd was just so excited to see this tag match with The Rock and Jericho against Booker T and Rhino later.
And I, you know, with the addition of The Rock and Booker into this, I think it made this segment even better. It was already a very funny segment, and to kind of have that tag team, you know, have The Rock and Jericho tag team in these two.
This was like a near 20-minute segment as well. We had like 40 minutes of talking.
But really good.
Yep, good, entertaining stuff. And then
Rhino kind of felt out of place.
Rhino had nothing to add.
He's not a funny guy at all. I don't know if he's ever told a joke.
Well, guess what, Rock? You're going to suck my... anyway, and then Rock went on to... He said, we're going to do some geography and go across some countries. They really made no sense.
I don't know.
Led to some flotation device joke for Stephanie's tits.
He went a bit far with the geography.
He was like, all right, Rock, we had a good promo. We didn't need your 2 cents at the end. Austin and Deborah are in their office, and Shane Helms walks in, Hurricane Helms. And Austin asks, who are you? And he says, I'm Hurricane Helms.
Well, this was like Gregory Helms. Gregory Hurricane.
Oh, yeah, Gregory Helms, because he wasn't allowed to be Shane at the time.
He had no gimmick, basically.
And he says, I'm ready to do something. And Austin asks, what's that? He's like, that's a tattoo of the Green Lantern.
Pretty good.
And Deborah laughs. Deborah's laughing. Oh, what a nerd. What a geek.
I'm surprised she even knows what the Green Lantern is.
Do you think they went into this segment with the idea of talking about the tattoo? Or do you think Austin just picked up on that? Because in every interaction tonight that he had with people, it seemed like there was one thing he narrowed in on and then just played off of it.
Yeah. I really feel like it could have been that. Because, I mean, I don't think for a second that they planned this whole Hurricane superhero gimmick based off of this. I don't think so.
And Helms has said in interviews that, like, Austin just mentioned the tattoo and this thing just went from there.
I think that was very likely.
And Helms is like, you know, defensive here. He's like, yeah, the Green Lantern. He knocked out Superman once. Like, says this so authoritatively. And then he asks if the Green Lantern could beat Kurt Angle. And Austin then instructs him to act like a hurricane and cause mass destruction. And it ends with Helms just taking a tomato out of the, like, vegetable platter. And Austin just saying, yeah, have a tomato. Such a bizarre segment.
It really felt...
But this, like, started off his gimmick.
Pretty much, yeah. And, you know, it felt like an improvised segment with no real goal, but it almost worked like a brainstorming session of sorts that did lead to something that was, you know, that made this guy's career.
I found these segments with Austin really interesting to watch.
They're interesting. I wouldn't say they're all good. but they're definitely interesting.
Test then shows up. They show how he had just recently he came out to the ring. He turned heel to help Canyon and DDP win the tag titles on SmackDown the prior week. And we got Test against Spike Dudley, who is accompanied by Molly Holly. And they explain that Spike is coming back from a broken leg. So what is the first spot of the match? He goes for the Dudley Dog, the acid drop, which got a name change in WWE. And he is tossed to the floor off the top and lands on his fucking leg. What a spot to come back to. This is the opening spot. Test rams him back first into the post, throws him in, but then misses an elbow drop. Spike hits a drop kick to his knee and a Hurricane Rana out of the corner, but then Test blocks a power bomb and the Dudley Dog, and then Test just kills him with a big boot and pins him at a minute 49. He power bombs Spike after the match, and Molly runs in, slapping Test. And then Test kicks her in the gut and goes to powerbomb Molly, but the APA run in for the save, followed by the Dudleys, and the babyfaces clear the ring, and they announce that there would be a six-man tag with Spike and the APA against Test and the Dudleys at SummerSlam.
I would say Test winning here was perhaps the only instance of like an Alliance member getting one over the WWE, at least in terms of winning a match. And, you know, Test. Test.
This is a test.
Yeah. It was really funny, Heyman here, putting Test over as the underdog versus Spike Dudley.
Yeah. Some good stuff. Kurt Angle's in the catering area, drinking milk, as Wei mentioned earlier, as Matt Hardy and Lita, a much younger-looking Matt Hardy, walks in to see how he's doing. And Kurt Angle says, "I am going to kill Austin on Sunday." And they bring up Hurricane Helms' speech earlier about Green Lantern being able to beat the Olympic hero, and Kurt Angle just laughs about what a lame cartoon character the Green Lantern is. So Hurricane walks in, knocks Kurt's milk away, and then gets tossed onto the table. Kurt beats him with a vegetable platter and yells, "No one spills my milk, and no superhero is a match for an Olympic hero." And he walks off. As Matt Hardy asked Talita who her favorite superhero was, and it was Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So just top babyface Kurt Angle. Don't spill my milk.
And just more of more instances of just the whole WCW roster, aside from Test and Steve Austin and RVD being treated as complete
goofballs.
Just random bodies.
Next up was the hardcore title match with Rob Van Dam defending it against Kurt Angle. They start fighting on the floor. It's hardcore rules, so they can do covers anywhere. And Angle gets thrown over the barricade as Austin and Deborah are watching in the back. There's a chair set up in the corner by Van Dam, but then he gets drop kicked right into the chair. Van Dam hits a running drop kick into the chair to Angle as he was sure to get his forearm up, as it was a RVD protection. And Van Dam then jumps onto the top, or at least leaps up into the corner, but Angle responds with a clothesline in midair coming out of the corner, and then applies the ankle lock as Raven, Tommy Dreamer, and Mike Awesome run out. Remember Mike Awesome? And then out of nowhere, Jeff Hardy shows up, scales the barricade, takes out Raven. Dreamer is then put into the ankle lock in the ring, as Hardy then hits the swanton to Van Dam, and he pins Van Dam after Angle had already hit him with the angle slam. This whole thing went 3 minutes and 24 seconds. Jeff Hardy wins the hardcore title. I would say this was about the best heat you could get for a 3-minute and 24-second match.
Sure, perhaps. Yeah.
This was so fast-paced.
This was Angle and RVD. But then I was just reminded of this stupid 24/7 rule, and I kind of took me out of it.
Not a fan.
No.
That was another match for SummerSlam. Jeff Hardy and Rob Van Dam in a ladder match.
For the hardcore title?
Yes.
Yeah. Worthless title.
Austin and Deborah.
At this point, it wasn't even like a real title. Like when it started, it was like the broken up old Winged Eagle belt.
If nothing else, it was a title that people were interested in RVD and Jeff Hardy. And the title was an excuse that they could do the kind of match they wanted, where they could brawl everywhere.
But I mean, the physical title itself, it was just, by this point, it was like a leather, just the leather. Like the gold plates had fallen off and they had painted the gold plates on. So it was just like
a piece of leather. A lot of wear and tear, Wei. It's hardcore.
Yeah, I guess.
Stasiak is then with Deborah after the commercial, while Austin is presumably taking a shit in the washroom. This is what literally was discussed here. And Stasiak is worried about interrupting Austin, really wants to make an impact. And as he's standing there, Austin flings open the door, smashing Sean Stasiak. And Austin walks off, telling Deborah he did not flush.
That's disgusting.
This was such a strange time. Main event time. Booker T and Rhino against The Rock and Chris Jericho. Super atmosphere for the match. The heels got the advantage on Jericho early on. Jericho hit a flapjack and then made the hot tag to Rock, who was in with Rhino, but then got hit from behind by Booker. But Rock makes his own comeback. He goes to the ropes, and Rhino pulls down the top rope, sending Rock to the floor. And then Booker gets the advantage, hits a scissors kick, a spin-a-rooney. Jericho makes a save on a pin attempt. Then Rock comes back with a flying forearm to Rhino. Both men are down, makes the hot tag to Jericho, who's in with a spinning heel kick. Goes for a drop kick off the ropes to Booker on the apron, but he slips on the ropes, but catches Booker with a forearm to save the spot. And then Rhino's laid out. Jericho goes for the lion salt onto Stephanie, who was very much battling her dress here as Jericho went for the walls of Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
We might have got a different slip here. Had who knows?
Yeah.
Then Nick Patrick runs in for the count, but Rock pulls him out. People's Elbows is delivered to Rhino, but before he can hit it, Booker pulls Rock out as he's running the ropes. Jericho applies the walls to Rhino as he taps out, but there's no referee. So Mike Chioda sprints down the ramp, but out of nowhere, Shane McMahon takes him out with a shoulder block.
An amazing.
Holy tackle. Shit.
Destroyed him.
I think Mike Chioda died here.
Yeah.
Stephanie is then in the ring. Jericho goes for the walls with Rhino, but is hit with a low blow, and then Rhino ends up pinning Jericho as Charles Robinson counts the three at 8 minutes and 46 seconds. And there's a gore delivered to Jericho after the match. Rock attacks Shane. Robinson is then left. He goes. He hits him with the rock bottom, then a rock bottom to Rhino. Goes for one on Shane, but Booker hits him from behind and takes him out with the bookend. And then Shane gets a chair. There is a second bookend by Booker onto the chair. Does the spin-a-rooney, and the Alliance celebrate as they go off the air with Jim Ross and Paul Heyman doing the big hard sell for SummerSlam this Sunday with The Rock and Booker T.
The announcers didn't recognize it as the bookend. They just said, oh, he's stealing The Rock's move.
And well, yeah, no one watched WCW. This was clear evidence of that.
Absolutely, and that was my point. It's just nobody really did any type of research going into it. But I thought this was a very good match and an excellent finish, despite all the overbooking. It was very entertaining, very fast-paced, and very well executed.
Yeah, so... what did this Raw do for you in terms of spending a hypothetical $30 to watch SummerSlam next week?
I thought it was a good Raw. I thought it was a very entertaining show.
Really hot crowd.
And, but, you know, as an angle, as a storyline, it really did very little. And that had little to do with this episode itself, more so to do with just how everything was laid out up to this point with the invasion angle. I mean, there's not for a second did anybody think that... Booker versus Rock wasn't going to end up the way it ended up. And, I mean, you're going to have a WCW, ECW versus WWE match with Steve Austin versus Kurt Angle, like two WWF guys. I don't know. It was perhaps the best they could do at the time with all the chips that they had and with all the reactions that that were given. But I can't say that I was really looking forward. I wasn't really looking forward to this show.
It really did, you know, in terms of the business the invasion generated. It was that big invasion pay-per-view that did like 770,000 buys the prior month. And it was kind of just diminishing returns after that. I think people, like, just on this alone, we got kind of inter-promotional matches, which really quickly weren't special anymore. And
they weren't even really inter-promotional. Like, it was... A bunch like Test versus Spike Dudley is that interpretation?
Yeah, but even like, you know, Undertaker and Kane against Palumbo and O'Hare.
Yeah,
no interest, yeah. Not special at all. And that was one of the big problems of the invasion was how quickly they not only made the WCW guys look so ineffective, but also just made these dream matches. Even with the lower end guys, it was nothing after no time flat. So there you go. That was Raw. I give the show a 7 out of 10. I wasn't bored during the show. Really hot crowd. So yeah, some
really great.
You really got to see a lot of the personalities that were able to just really play off of each other really, really well throughout this show. But it was also a time when it was, you know, not what a lot of people had wanted out of the invasion. And you could really see this thing just not, it wasn't going to reach its potential. And the key figures were not there.
They had committed to this invasion deal. And they just had to see it through, even though it felt like they had to make the best of out of a losing situation. I give it a 7 as well.
All right. We are both in agreement, a 7 out of 10. And we now send it over here to the Law message board to see what you all thought of the show. And let's start off with Stephen from Chicago. Greetings to the laptop-killing Canadian and the tech-savvy Chinaman. That's offensive.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I don't know if the guy's aware, but...
Yeah, it's not a nice term. There sure was a hell of a lot of titles in the WWE in 2001. Nostalgia really does make everything seem better. While there were great characters in WWE at the time, some in their prime, like Angle, and some slightly past theirs, like Austin, the actual product on this show was not anywhere near as good as I remembered it being. As always on this show, Heyman and microphone equals gold. Commissioner Regal was by far the best GM authority figure in modern-day WWE. This was the only version of The Undertaker that I was a fan of. It was a very cool visual with him and Sarah sitting on top of the cage at the end of the match. Anybody who is a fan of the Attitude Era is already familiar with the Jericho Rock Stephanie segment. This was Rock and Jericho at their best here. Stephanie and Booker's reactions were great too. The finish to the main event and the end of the show was way overbooked. It's always fun to watch WWE from this time period due to the fantastic crowd reactions. This was a good episode of Raw that built up SummerSlam very well. A 7 out of 10. FYI guys, I don't know if you indulged in any deep dish while you were here for WrestleMania 22. I'm going to assume that Wade didn't, because if he had, he would know that with all of the dough and cheese on one slice, there is no way he could eat 5 in 2 minutes, as he claimed last week. Well, I have had deep dish pizza, and I could certainly do more than one in a 2 minute period that MVP was unable to hit last week.
Why do they have so many pizzas there on standby?
Yeah, they clearly had high expectations of what these two guys could eat.
2 minutes?
I mean, Matt Hardy, two? Really?
Two slices?
Yeah.
They had multiple pies.
Yeah.
We go to Rob H., who says, I really enjoyed the show, even though it did seem to be very busy. It was mostly entertaining, although Austin seemed a little off in the dragged-out first segment. Actually, his character just seemed forced and awkward at this point. There's so much going on in this episode, but it was a symptom of having too much talent on your roster and not being sure what to do with them. It's a little wonder that the likes of Raven, Dreamer, DDP, and Taz amounted to little after the invasion. Their characters were so weak here. Overall, I was entertained by it without being blown away. The whole episode, though, is a fantastic example as of why the angle failed, but I imagine at the time it built sufficient interest for SummerSlam. 7 out of 10.
Josh from Kelowna, British Columbia. This was a really good episode of Raw overall. The opening segment really set the pace, and Stone Cold was great on the mic. I loved how the members of the Alliance were separately highlighted, particularly RVD and Taz. At this time, you could really see who the WWE had the love for, with the ECW getting way more attention than any of the WCW guys throughout. Paul Heyman and Jim Ross were a great duo. Heyman was really good at putting over his guys, of course, but was overall a very good color commentator. Matches and segments were notably shorter, which seemed to be for the better a lot of the time. Nothing dragged on, and they did a lot of storytelling in what would have been just a 2-hour block. This had a lot to do with there just being so much talent on the roster at this time. There were more wrestlers than you could shake a stick at, and really, and wasn't really sure who had what titles at any given moment in some parts. You could tell at this point was where they were heading down the road to unifications and letting go some of these guys. Match of the night for me was Tajiri and Albert. We got all of our standard Tajiri spots, which I loved, and you got to see interference done right, with Regal's participation being used to set up the bigger victory. It was also a big help that this match had three of my faves in it, with Tajiri, Regal, and Albert. Moment of the match, though, was Paul Heyman exclaiming at the beginning how he loved seeing two WWF guys beat the hell out of each other to highlight Tajiri as an ECW alumnus following his victory. He gives us 8 out of 10.
Ronaldo from Milan, Italy. Yeah, the Stone Cold heel turn was certainly not a work of art, but the guy was so talented he made it plausible no matter what.
Asta became face by playing hard-ass heel, so how can you make the people hate him? By having him act as an arrogant, cowardly dork with an attitude. And how strange is it to see the main guy for the WWF surrounded by guys who, at one point or another in their career, were legit main eventers in other organizations. Most of them stayed in the WWE just for a cup of tea, but it's still a visual. Despite the way most of these guys were utilized, I dare to say this was the best roster in WWE history. Other than that, I've removed everything invasion-related from my brain, and I'm glad it stays that way.
Gaurav Kumar from India. I know not many people were a fan of the heel Stone Cold, but I loved him as a heel. His promos were hilarious, especially with that raspy voice of his. I never understood why RVD was in the Alliance as a heel. He was the worst heel in the history of WWE. If you want to be a heel, you shouldn't be doing such awesome moves of off the top rope, which make the fans cheer for you. I always felt that RVD should have jumped ship to the WWF side and transformed into a babyface. Jim Ross and Heyman were pure gold on commentary. Heyman played the perfect heel color guy. I was shocked to see how Cole looked before 12 years with that skinny look and goatee. Look at the transformation he's made since then. He now has more gray hair than Vince. I loved Sean Stasiak's gimmick. It almost made you feel sorry for him. So many boob jokes by Y2J on Stephanie. I wonder how Vince told Jericho to deliver his lines. Maybe something like this. I want you to go out there and make it clear once and for all to the entire world that my daughter is a boob job. Also, don't forget to call her a whore. I guess Vince will do anything for a pop from the crowd. Rock's mic skills were great, and he was fantastic at improvising stuff. Rhino's gore was the best spear ever, even better than Goldberg's, I would say. I love the invasion angle. I give this show 8 boob jokes out of 10.
Duke. Great go-home show before SummerSlam. Great first segment with Austin and the rest of the Alliance. Good matches all night long. Was it just me, or did The Undertaker not give a fuck at that DDP was chasing his wife around the ring when he was stuck in the cage? The Rock Jericho comedy segment had me laughing my ass off in 2001 and in 2013. Great show from start to finish. Wish I could enjoy WWE as much as this every week on Raw. I give the show 8 out of 10.
I would say I'm looking more forward to this year's SummerSlam than I was at the time for the 2001 version.
I agree.
I'm really looking forward to SummerSlam this year.
I think top to bottom, the storylines are a lot more clear, and this invasion was just such a mess.
Like, you had great, great wrestling at the time, but the creative at this point was left a lot to be desired, I think. Paul from Germany. The first segment really highlights everything wrong with the invasion. Instead of properly using the talents of the big WCW guys they had at the time, DDP and Booker, and building up guys like RVD, Rhino, Sean O'Hare, Raven, and Shane Helms, it's Austin and his merry band of jobbers. Definitely not one of Austin's better promos. He seemed weirdly disinterested, and it dragged on for so long. This was especially irritating when some later matches ran very short, like RVD and Angle. Since Jeff Hardy ended up winning the hardcore title in that match, would Angle have won the title if he had pinned RVD? Again, funny backstage stuff with Angle, but serious in the ring. Now more than ever, I stand by my Angle-Daniel Bryan comparison from the King of the Ring review a few weeks back. The show did what it had to do, and that was making you buy SummerSlam. I assume you will review that one next, and I'm looking forward to that. It's interesting to note that a lot of the guys prominently featured on the show are still involved with the WWE in some capacity. Yes, which we did go over earlier. And P.S., I think the current Michael Cole ate the coal from that show.
Mike from Caledon. Hey guys, my second time posting on this. In the past few years, I have lost over 150 pounds. Diet and exercise played a huge part, but so did Review Away in wrestling. I always listen to you guys while at the gym, and it has helped me lose weight because I'm into the show and can spend hours at the gym. I'm down to a cool 190 from 354 pounds.
Whoa.
And I'm living a much better life. If it wasn't for Review Away in wrestling, I don't know if I would have been able to do it. Thanks a lot, guys. Hope to see you at Ring of Honor on Saturday, and we'll say hello for sure. The one thing I can say about the invasion angle is that not even nostalgia can save it. I bet Booker T regrets ever partaking in the Weakest Link.
Wow.
Did you realize that we had calorie shrinking abilities?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
All the, forget DDP yoga.
Just listen
to Review
off.
Away. Just listen.
Just hear those, hear that fat burn away.
Laugh the pounds off.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, congratulations,
yeah,
Mike. That's incredible to have lost that amount of weight.
That's how much I weigh, 150 pounds. That's how you how much you and I both weigh.
Yeah, that's
you
incredible.
You lost one of us.
Wow. From 354 to 190.
That's incredible.
Holy Christ. That's very impressive. Muhammad Ali stopping in to leave some feedback from Italy.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Germany. We got all these overseas ones. Hey guys, first thing you notice at once is how electric the crowd is, and nobody can really open up the show like Jim Ross. I love the chemistry between Heyman and JR. Crowd was hot for almost everything on the show, and wow, Sean Stasiak was really, really pumped up indeed. The continuous hype for SummerSlam throughout the show and the hot crowd made it an excellent go-home show, and of course, the highlight of the show, was Stephanie's boobies segment. That had me laughing out loud. Rocky and Y2J had amazing comedic chemistry. Show rating, let the boobies hit the floor. Jesus Christ, I wonder.
Boobies.
All right, we go to Christian Small, who says, when the show started, I heard that awesome theme song in that crowd and remembered how WWE was back in 2001. What a time it was. Everyone was over. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Everyone had their own website, and everyone had a Tuttle, or at least that's how it
That was notable. We had WWFEdgeChristian.com, and they all had their own personal URLs, which disappeared as business went down.
Actually, it just makes it more inconvenient than anything. I mean, I got to type in all this just to go to this guy's site. For me, this was a pretty easy show to get through, and I didn't really hate anything. As an Englishman, I love the setup of Regal's office, but whenever they were there, I expected the suit of armor to attack someone from behind. I was also a fan of Albert's entrance just because of Uncle Cracker and knowing John will likely play it in this episode.
What?
The one big downfall of this episode was the opening segment. It just dragged for me, and I didn't really achieve much. It's not like I'm against long promo segments, as I quite enjoyed Rock and Jericho. Later, which seemed to focus on Stephanie's boobs for some reason. And speaking of Stephanie, we almost saw a lot more of her in the main event when Jericho went for the walls. Overall, I think this show set up SummerSlam well, but it also summed up the biggest problem with the invasion angle, and that's the fact half of the invasion looked like idiots by the end of the night. Outside of Dudley's, RVD, and Austin, everyone looked like bumbling fools.
Rob from Wolverhampton, England. If this Raw needed a slogan, they should give it This Sunday on Pay-Per-View. I swear Jim Ross said that line about 6,000 times during this show, but then again, I guess at least I know what I have to do for that Sunday. Heel Austin looked very awkward and forced. The opening segment dragged, and to be quite honest, Stone Cold couldn't salvage it. He was especially annoying, breaking every two sentences to say what. Not quite sure why these guys didn't call a mutiny against Austin. He was an outsider running the shots, which wasn't right, but that's just one of the many problems of 2001's ill-thought-out invasion story. Other than that, the show was relatively enjoyable. It's great to see the product so hot, even during WWF's worst period in about 4 years at that point. Fans were still 10 times more excited than most Raw crowds of today. The jobbers running in to try and attack Angle made the Alliance's reserves look terrible and stooge-like compared to the WWF, who seemed to have their wits about them. Although I must admit, Sean Stasiak getting taken out by a suit of armor and a door was entertaining. Rock and Jericho promo is one of my most fondly remembered promos for Jericho, even if it's just one where he critiques Stephanie McMahon's bust. Overall, the matches weren't too bad. They were just very busy, too many run-ins, especially a title change in the middle of a match. Very confusing, but it was at least a way of keeping both RVD and Angle looking strong without one having to go over the other. I give this a 7 out of 10.
Finally, from Tommy in Northern California. I'm just about finished watching this show for the first time ever. Since abandoning the product in early 2001, right after the WCW collapse, I never had the pleasure to revisit the Invasion or really any WWF/WWE programming until about 2009 to the present day. I can't exactly say I was missing out too much on storylines, and especially on the Austin heel turn, but this show was pretty cool in terms of seeing old WCW and ECW faces. On the flip side, it was also confusing to see completely unrecognizable WCW faces, like the two dudes who wrestled The Undertaker and Kane in a cage. I literally have no idea what their names were as of then, and will not put forth the energy to look them up now, because a lot of the talent overflow was just that bland.
All right, well, thanks everyone to all your international feedback. Quite the scope we got in terms of countries we hit. Forget The Rock. We went on a geographical tour just now on the message board. So thank you very much, everybody. Of course, next week we are going to review SummerSlam from 2001, featuring all of these matches, including another steel cage match with The Undertaker and Kane to look forward to.
Nice.
So that's coming up next week from San Jose, California. And we're going to get on out of here. But wait, what's a song that could really kind of encapsulate this edition of Raw, this review away? I mean, so many different themes we could go with.
Right. Well, how about isn't there like some song about boobs somewhere?
I don't know.
Some
boobs don't get kind of the musical love that like asses do.
Yeah, asses are. Well, I mean, I guess in rap, I guess, let me, boob song, tits song.
Could there be a song that, like, could have a double entendre to it, like, ever-increasing chest, or war chest?
I don't know, man.
Songs?
Yeah, there aren't enough songs about titties.
Let's see. Okay, five songs about boobs. Khalees, Milkshake. The Commodores.
It's not even really about boobs.
No, not really. Dr. Dre and Ed Lover. Tootin' on the Hooters.
Okay.
Lena Alexandra, My Boobs Are Okay. No Effects, New Boobs. Frank Zappa, Titties and Beer. Mondo Ray, Brush Your Tits. Anvil, Show Me Your Tits. Mary's Kids, Tiny Tits, Tight Ass. Sparks, Tits. Foxheads, also called Tits. Psycho Stick, Because Boobs. The Who, Squeeze Box. And that rounds out our songs about... That was way more than five songs about boobs.
Yeah, well, of those, deal. What do you like?
Well, Milkshake, you're right. I don't really consider that. Brick House, I mean, that's quite the stretch.
I'd say either the NoFX song, New Boobs, or the Frank Zappa, which I think Mouth would like. But it's up to you, man.
Let's go out with Frank Zappa. All right, we're going to get on out of here. But in the meantime, folks, if you haven't listened to them already, and I don't know why you wouldn't have already, but we have The Law up from Sunday night, as well as a bonus show from the weekend where I ran down the UFC on Fox card live from my home, where I spoke for 36 minutes to myself about fights. As Wei just looks at, what a loser.
No, I don't.
What a loser.
You do that every week on the MMA Report.
I guess so. So those are up as well. Monday night's Review of Raw, where we chat about a taped edition of Raw from Laredo, Texas. That is up as well. More shows. Myself, W.H. Park, and Chris Charlton, we previewed the entire G1 Climax tournament. So that is up on the site and iTunes by subscribing to Live Audio Wrestling. Interview with Carl Anderson, who's part of the G1. And then starting this week, we're going to be having daily updates on the G1 Climax. We got Review and Impact, the MMA Report. No reason to need anything else in life other than a free subscription to Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes.
And if you're working out, think of how much weight you'll lose.
You could be in the negatives by the end of the G1 Climax if you listen to this every single day.
You'll cease to exist.
Yeah.
You'll lose so much weight.
You're gonna be down to just... You could fit in Wei's water bottle. That's how tiny you can be. So do it for your health, if nothing else.
Yeah.
This podcast really is saving lives.
Yeah, we are.
It is.
Yeah, we actually
That's are. Fact. That's a fact.
And that is amazing. That's, again, an awesome story. I think we need to get on the reverse, you and I. We need to a podcast that will help us gain weight.
Yeah, maybe. We could
do that?
We could do an interactive podcast where every time we say something like we play the X Factor theme, it's like you eat a cupcake.
Okay. That sounds terrible.
Yeah. We should do a whole show where
you eat a cracker.
I listened to a podcast recently where it's like all their listeners, they made a list of stuff the hosts do and turned it into a drinking game that they had to do as the show was going on.
Okay.
It was not good. It was not good radio to listen to.
Like they on the radio, they would drink?
And they would every time that they broke one of the rules, Wei shakes his head at offensive statement. You'd have to take a shot of something.
Oh, I see.
But you'd have to.
But they're aware of this, so they can just like do this. I could shake my head at an offensive statement just to get these guys to drink.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think it works as well that way.
Yeah.
When you're in control.
I don't think you and I have any discernible traits about us that people could possibly generate a list on.
I don't think so. I think we're too normal.
Yeah. We don't do anything that's annoying or irritating or not correct.
We're very,
despite 18 pages of evidence.
Not correct. Oh, yeah. No, you're never wrong.
Our favorite thread.
Yeah, you're never wrong.
All right. We're going to get out of here. Go to liveaudiowrestling.com, subscribe on iTunes, follow Wei on Instagram at Wei, W-A-I, 0937, and go see his doppelganger.
That's right. And also
Fake.
What?
Nah, I was trying to come up with a name that would work. What could we call him?
I don't know what his name is.
We should name your doppelganger. Okay. That's kind of fun. Go in the thread and name Wei's doppelganger. Someone post the photo.
Leave a comment. And one more plug for
my friend's video.
Oh, yeah.
Toronto's worst drivers.
This video's awesome.
I've got like, 9 people there.
Does he got any? Is he working on any now that he's going to be putting up soon?
I don't know. He's not even aware that I'm talking about this.
Oh, you should let him know.
I don't even know if he wants it out there. But
it's a really good video.
Toronto's worst drivers. It's a collection of my friend. If you didn't hear about it before, my friend, he's begun to do a number of YouTube videos about just random things. He does unboxing videos, unboxing cell phones, and all that. But another video of his is called Toronto's Worst Drivers Caught on Tape, and it's just the compilation of all the near death accidents that he's almost seen or been involved in over the past 3 years, cuz he has a camera mounted on his dash.
It's so good that now when I'm driving, like, I'm paying attention to traffic and wishing that I had one of these just to be recording. Like, it just seems like it's no effort on your part. You just turn the ignition on, it starts filming.
Yeah.
And then you just compile the stuff together.
That's right. It's entertaining to me. I mean, the best part about YouTube, of course, is the comments. And it's entertaining to me to hear, like, there's a guy who is criticizing his driving.
He's saying
that he's the bad driver. And my friend had to respond to him and justify why he was fine.
There was the one where it's like, yeah, man, he was just riding that horn for effect.
Yeah.
But these are great videos.
Yeah.
How many views does that have?
I'm hyping it too much. It's only like 2,000. It's an underground thing.
Well, let's get it up to, like, the TNA mystery video. If we hit 250,000, we'll give you a new clue.
Whoa.
Maybe.
Yeah? What do you mean? He'll look for more accidents? He'll look for a bigger accident.
No, maybe he'll, maybe he's got some great near accident that he can roll out as a means to entice people to watch his videos. It's like, you think this is cool? Wait till you see some of the videos I haven't posted yet.
Oh, wow.
There might be some cars that flip.
Okay. Yeah, perhaps. Wait till the winter.
Have you ever seen a car flip in person?
Oh, no.
It's only happened once to me, I saw.
You've seen it?
I was driving on Lakeshore early one morning into work, and it was, like, empty other than me and, like, 2 or 3 other cars. And I saw this SUV fucking go into the middle where it was just grass that separates the two sides of the lakeshore. And he just flipped, like, twice.
What the fuck?
And I pulled over, and I was just like, oh, my God, I cannot look at someone dead. Like, I was just, that's immediately what I thought. I thought this dude's dead. And all of a sudden he pops up without a scratch and just walks away from it. And the cops had to come.
What kind of SUV?
Crashed one. I don't know.
Let's give a plug to this company.
Well, what happened was he told the cop, I had to give a statement and stuff of what I saw. And they explained to me, he fell asleep at the wheel and he just instinctively hugged the wheel. And he said that might have saved his life. Whoa. It was just hugging the wheel and it just flipped over and he was just so lucky. He didn't even like have a scratch on him.
Was he asleep?
And this car was totaled.
Was he asleep at the time of the crash?
Yeah. Yeah, he fell asleep.
Because, like, I hear...
Or
like,
woke up as it was flipping.
Oh, okay. Because I hear, like, a lot of times, you know, part of the reason why you get injured from a crash is because your body's tense. Whereas, you know, if your body's limp, like if you're already knocked out or something, it decreases your chance of getting injured because you're not impacting as hard.
Right. That's kind of interesting.
But take my advice, for those of you who have long drives, you got to do some hip-hop karaoke in the car. It saved my life many a time. And it'll probably save yours too, John, now that we're about to embark on this journey of hip-hop karaoke.
I don't know if we're going on this journey
together.
What do
you mean? How many did you get? You got so many
I counted them on Review Raw. That's the number.
A lot of Wow. I think there are a lot of expectations, including the notable rapper.
Well, we talked about that on Monday.
Okay.
But I do think everyone should drive safely, though. Don't drive tired, or else you're gonna have to check the ER if you fall asleep at the wheel. All right, we should get on out of here. Thank you, as always, for listening. SummerSlam 2001 next week. Excited. 3-hour pay-per-view, eh?
I can't wait.
Me neither. That's coming up next week. We'll chat with you all then. I seen some ugly trees. There was a werewolf walking along the side of me. I'm reading on bed. You know I ain't no sissy. Got a big titty girl in by the day. Chrissy. Talking about her in my bike. In the street.
side of the mountain. Even the crickets were acting weird up here, and so I figured I might just drink a little beer. I said, give me some of that, what you're sucking on. But there was no reply, cause she was gone. Where's those titties I'd like so well? And my goddamn beer is full, I started to yell. Then I heard this noise like a crunch twig. Then up jumped the devil, he's about this big. He had a red on and a widow's peak and a pointed tail and like a sulfury. Yes, it was him, all right. I swear I know it was. He had some human flesh, the fun beneath his claws. You know, it looked to me like it was titty skin. I said, you son of a bitch, because I was mad at him. Well, he just got out his floss and started cleaning his fangs. So I shot him with my shooter, said, bang, bang, bang. Then the sucker just laughed and said,
put it away. You know I ate it all up. Now what you gonna say?
You ate my Chrissy?
Titties and all.
Well, what about the beer then, boy?
The cans this tall?
Even her boots?
Would I lie to you?
Shit, you must have been hungry.
Yes.